ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I want to thank you for joining us today. And I am pleased to have my co-host, Dave Allen, joining me today. And we're going to bring you our opinions and commentary on the political and economic issues of today. And today is July 19th, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave. It's Friday.
Friday, Melody.
Friday.
Hello, hello. Ooh.
I prefer Friday much more than I prefer Wednesday, you know, but it's always a hectic day here at Discount Gold and Silver on Fridays, so it goes by very quickly. But with that said, gold prices, the rise in gold from yesterday went by very quickly. It was here yesterday and gone today. Mm. We're holding $14.25 for gold today, ladies and gentlemen, down $21.10. Silver was down 15 cents, but still at $16.27. Platinum was down 6 at $850, with palladium falling 17 at $1,517. The USDX today was stronger by 0.47 at 97.16. Crude oil was up 0.79 at 56.09. And the paper markets today, you have the Dow down 67 points, 27,155. The NASDAQ was down 0.75%, 8,146, down 60. And the S&P 2,976, down 18. And the 10-year yield, 2.05%, up 0.01. Asia, Japan was up 2% overnight. I don't know what got them running so high. And Hong Kong was up a little over 1%. And a little bit of our fear, and the fear and greed index is moving on down to 45. It was up there, you know, closer to 60 and 65 there for a while. So it's, you know, it's... We got some things out, you know, everything is, I guess Boeing came out about their 737 hit today, and it's amazing how all eyes are on the next, is, you know, the Fed's meeting. It's, it really is interesting. So, you know, we did have a great day for gold. We did hit 1452.60 in 2013. And but we hit the highest level since then yesterday. Gold briefly passed 1450. And of course, that is a 6-year high, 6-year peak. And of course, all from the signals from the Fed. Weaker dollar, that's what they want. I don't know how many times you have to hear the president say it, weaker dollar, which is in stark contrast to what his economic advisor wants, Larry Kudlow. He wants a strong dollar, strong dollar. So I don't think Kudlow is going to be around too much longer. You just can't, you know, unless he just folds and like so many of them do, they just fold to keep their jobs and does whatever is expected of them. And but it worked for him for a little while. So so we did see a little bit of a stronger dollar, Dave.
Yes, we did, you know, recovering from the sharp fall over the past week, again, being triggered largely by these dovish comments from the Fed types. You know, at a conference yesterday, New York Fed Pres John Williams said policymakers couldn't wait for economic disaster to hit before adding stimulus. And in a separate interview, Fed Vice Chair Richard Clarida said policymakers might need to act early to stimulate the U.S. economy as an insurance policy against rising risks. More on those comments in a minute. Analyst Jonathan Butler added, gold's still looking good. The interest rates and dollar environment, uncertainties over the U.S.-China trade war, and now the geopolitical situation being the icing on the cake, has all created a very supportive environment for gold.
And this is coming from a trader that we all know. And we all, ever since they took us and gave us the fiat dollar, gold was looking good. And it has looked good. It's going to look good. It's going to forever look good as long as we have that fiat dollar. That's not going to change, ladies and gentlemen. Our debt is getting higher and bigger. It's not going to go away. And these little uncertainties about the trade war, it is all icing on the cake. You know, the interest rates, these are all symptoms of the fiat dollar. You know, it's all part of it, but the base, the foundation, is the fiat dollar, and this is what has accumulated over this period of time since we've had that. And you know, as Dave said, we saw the dollar rebound, and you know, it was interesting, Dave. There, you know, everybody was yesterday, and this is my view of why. There's two reasons I believe gold went up and came back. Is because you did see investors that were really pricing in a very big chance of a 50 basis point cut in U.S. rates later this month, and today, and they kind of backed off that. And I guess they're looking at what, the 43% now off of the 60% yesterday.
Yeah, it's a big decline.
It's a big decline, and they're not going to get a 50%. They're not going to get a 50 basis point cut. I mean, if they do that, yeah, baby, you're going to see gold rise.
Again, and, you know, it's these algorithms. It's this automated computer buying and selling that I think is driving these just unreasonable increases. Primarily in the paper market, but I think we're seeing more and more of that in the paper gold market. Has an indirect effect on bullion, but you know, it's we've got to do something about that. That has just increases volatility far more than it. Than I believe it otherwise would be. But in any event.
I did like the response that we finally got a response out of. And I talk bullion. I don't talk about the paper trade. I don't talk about the shares. You know, when I see and I follow how the spot price of gold and silver react to something.
Right.
And I mean, we saw gold react to this possibility of a 50 basis point cut in rates. And that just shows me just how suppressed gold prices are. Finally, we got we talked about China being the lion or the bear, and you don't want to wake it, you know, because they become the giant. And well, this is gold. Gold is awakening. And it was good to see that type of response. And we saw it come down back in this. So once they start lowering those rates, because we know they're going to, I mean, I don't see much of a pullback in gold prices. It can happen. It can happen in silver, too. But I like the way gold responded yesterday. And I think at the very end of the day, it also responded to what was going on in Iran. With that being released, no one really knew what was going on, and I think that just pushed gold up a little bit more. And with that coming off and that being a little softened today in the news and so forth, you know, everything's coming back down. But gold, I think, could have dropped a lot more than what it did based on those two things. So gold's doing extremely well, and it's exciting to finally see it move. And but there were some other things in there. And we talked a little bit about this yesterday, and we did talk about how these, I think we did mention, was it Clarita, who said they need to start with a big tax cut, with a big interest rate cuts before bad things happen, before the economy starts to stumble, Dave?
Yeah, I think that might have been Williams, but... you know, they both, Clarita suggested it too, that you don't have to wait until things get so bad. Clarita and Williams, as we mentioned a couple of minutes ago, certainly did buoy the golden stock markets yesterday. They approach this blackout period ahead of their July 30 and 31st open market committee meeting. The U.S. money markets priced in 41 basis points of easing in July after the two Fed officials spoke. Traders later wound that back after, you know, a New York Fed spokesperson said that Williams' comment had been in the context of an academic speech and were not about potential upcoming policy actions. Oh, shame on you, John Williams, for teasing the markets.
Oh, I'll tell you, it just goes to show you it's not what they do, it's what they say.
Indeed.
You know, and they're just testing to see, they're just testing the markets on what's going, and that's what this, to me, this is what all the markets, this is what this is all about when they come out and release those statements. They're just going to test the markets to see what happens. So they know how far they can go or can't go. It's just like anything else. I mean, how else would you manipulate something and know what the outcome's going to be? You know, and Clarita, on the other hand, was discussing the current economic outlook in that television interview. And as I said, he made a comment, you don't need to wait until things get so bad to have a dramatic series of rate cuts. Well, that just goes to show you just how bad of a position that we're in. And that it's ready to come undone. And that it is ready to fall back. And the economy isn't doing as well. I mean, how long can they continue to cover up and to disguise what's truly going on? Good grief. I mean, there is a lot of mixed data out there, Dave.
Yes, there is. And, you know, Clarita talked about that, too. Saying, you know, I do think the global data has been disappointing on the downside. Disinflationary pressures, you know, if anything, are more intense than he thought so 6 weeks ago. And again, said Clarita added that, you know, when you only have so much stimulus at your disposal, it pays to act quickly to lower rates at the first sign of economic distress. You know, well, you know, we'll see what's going on now. You know, another an interview that took place over a week ago with Dow Jones that happened to be published this morning with St. Louis Prez, Fed Prez James Bullard said he'd support a quarter point reduction, but not all Fed officials are on board with even a decrease of that size. So, you know, perhaps the end of the month is not a done deal. Although, you know, I suspect they will end up, you know, at least, you know, doing a 25 basis point cut.
Well, I can't imagine what would happen to the markets if they didn't.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a good day for gold either, I'm afraid.
I'm not so sure about that. If they didn't do it, I don't know. It depends on what the markets did. If the markets dropped enough, gold would be fine.
Mm.
You know, I think gold would be fine. I think that gold would be better than the paper markets.
Yeah, let's operate on the assumption.
If it did fall back because the dollar strength, and they don't want the dollar strength, so, but if it did fall back, it would be very temporary because then you'd see everything else falling apart, and then gold would resume its position as real money and the safe haven that it really is. But, you know, I mentioned Iran, and now Iran talked about the drone that was shot down yesterday by a U.S. warship in the Strait of Hormuz. And it was the USS Boxer. It's an assault ship. Took down the drone after it came within 1,000 yards of the ship. This was reported by President Trump yesterday. The drone was immediately destroyed. We talked about this yesterday. It was breaking news when we were doing the program yesterday, Dave. But what's interesting is now, so far, the top Iranian general, who also said there's no missing drones or any reports of action by the USS Boxers. I guess this was the Iran's deputy foreign minister denied that the drone belonged to Iran, even suggested that it could have been a case of friendly fire, and in addition to what their top Iranian general had mentioned. Interesting.
It will be, it will be interesting over the next couple of days, as particularly if there are further calls for proof. I'll leave it at that. Let's see what Yeah, this general said that our president's drone shooting claim was part of an effort to raise insecurity in the Persian Gulf. That was a general of the Republic of Iran. And, you know, further rebuttal, Iranian news agencies carried a statement from the Revolutionary Guards today that claimed they will soon prove that we are wrong. So this is only going to, you know, ramp up geopolitical tensions between us and Iran, which have already escalated recently. We've accused Tehran of being behind two attacks on oil tankers in the Persian Gulf, which, of course, Iran has denied. Then later in June, an Iranian missile shot down an unmanned American drone over the Strait of Hormuz that it claimed was above its territory, while we've maintained it's been it was in international waters. Again, the Strait accounting for 30% of the world's seaborne oil traffic.
Well, not only that, now we have the British tanker.
Yes.
That have been raided in the Gulf, prompting a COBR emergency summit in major escalation of the tensions with Tehran. These seizures are unacceptable, and I'm trying to pull up this report, but it's not allowing me to open. It's from the Daily Mail, and I never have good luck with that website. They irritate me. But that you have Iran that is seizing the British oil tanker in the Gulf, and it'll be interesting because I don't know what the Brits would do. It's a hostile act. And any comments on that?
Well, one thing it could possibly do, I doubt the Brits would look at any action on its own, but it certainly could be a big favor of the U.S., who is, you know, been looking for some more allied support with its strategy with Iran, and especially with the U.K. being one of the other parties in the nuclear agreement. This could make things a tad more interesting in that respect.
You know, it's kind of interesting, because my biggest question, why would Iran do this? I mean, they're the ones that have been, you know, Britain, they wanted to keep the agreement going with. Now, again, this was a big question, whether Britain was in the agreement, or was it the European Union in the agreement with Iran? I'm not quite sure there. But President Donald Trump did say his warnings about Iran have proved to be correct. It only goes to show that what I'm saying about Iran, trouble, nothing but trouble. It goes to show you I was right about Iran. And he also hailed the close alliance between the U.S. and the U.K. And so the two countries would talk about the situation. And we'll talk a little bit more about this when we get back from a break. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Gentlemen, you're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. During the break, we were having a little bit of I was telling Dave it's been really strange because my television, I mean, I watch all news. I don't just stick to one. I listen to all as much as I can stomach on all of it. I mean, any of the news channels, it's very difficult to stomach anymore. But I do watch it. And my Fox News station, I have had no audio for 2 days. I have audio in all the other stations, but no audio on my Fox News. And I have Comcast. And I'm gonna let you listeners, your conspiracy minds float away today, and see what you can come up with that one. And but yeah, it is kind of interesting. And so I'll let you know when it gets fixed and what they said it was. But yeah, just that one station. And what's interesting is when I click to that station, it had the sound begins and then it cuts off. It does begin, and then it cuts off. So,
sounds anyway. Like a listening device to me, Melody.
Highly unlikely. Highly unlikely. But anyway, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has rejected the White House's most recent debt ceiling proposal. It included $150 billion in spending cuts. The White House sent a 2-year budget agreement to Pelosi late afternoon yesterday, requesting that the Democrats select $150 billion in spending cuts from a list of $507 billion in saving options. That's kind of funny. Okay, guys, here's some options for you. Pick and choose. Pick and choose. That is funny.
I know.
Is that how they do it? It's not how it's normally done, right?
Well, it's become very interesting over the last 10 years, how they do this. Of course, there are a number of years in the past 10 years where there haven't been any budgets, or just one appropriations act. But you know, when I was when I worked for the Congressional Budget Office a couple decades ago, every year, and I think they still may publish this every. Late winter, I believe it was, there was a budget cutting options book that normally had, you know, maybe 100-150 options for cutting spending, and they were largely spending proposals. There were some tax proposals as well, but you know, and then every now and then you know, one of the budget committees would latch on to, you know, one or more of these options, especially the spending side, as you know, they were looking during the reconciliation process to meet certain targets that the committees had to meet to you know, meet the spending and revenue and deficit targets in the budgets. So I don't know if they're used anymore, but they're still published.
Well, here's one. She got one.
There you go.
And really, 150 out of 574 billion really doesn't seem like it'd be that difficult. And what's 150 billion going to do anyway? It's not going to do anything. So to me, it was probably sent over to her just as more of an irritation than anything.
Yeah.
Here, do this. I'm telling you to do this. And of course, that's not how they're going to do it. But of course, she rejected the deal. And it didn't include any revenue or tax increases. And, of course, she rejected the deal after Mnuchin had said yesterday that the market shouldn't be concerned about a debt ceiling deal getting passed. Well, maybe they should.
Well, he did say that neither party wants to put the U.S. government at risk of defaulting. And an interesting note, Republican Senator Kevin Cramer of North Dakota said Pelosi's work on the debt ceiling doesn't need to be perfect. He said, I've been pretty impressed with the way she's negotiated with Secretary Mnuchin in the past week or two. Good politics is good for all players. Politics is the art of the doable. With all the back and forth this week over what different things going on in Washington, I found that to be I won't say refreshing, sort of puts an ironic smile on my face. But here's the thing, lawmakers are set to leave for their August recess next week. Both sides have been negotiating on future spending limits, and it looks as though they're working towards a two-year budget deal, which in my mind can only mean further bad news for the deficit and our debt.
Yeah, it's business as usual, ladies and gentlemen. Business as usual, and it's. We did talk a little bit. I talked at length yesterday about the House passed the bill to raise minimum wage. So we did talk about that yesterday. Nice. I don't know if you had any specific comments you wanted to make on that before we, and it the part that gets my goat is even the CBO, they come out and said that there's going to be job losses, but you know what? Its analyst reflects the benefits of raising wages could outweigh the costs. Well, I just don't understand how people can really sign off on something. It's okay if someone loses a job and destroys their family just so someone else can get a few bucks more.
Therein lies my issue with it, because I don't think it needs to be an either or. There's one piece of this that doesn't get, I think, enough of airtime. And we don't have to go into it a lot today because you already spent a good time on it yesterday. But with record profits, almost not all across the board, but record profits overall, it seems to me that there's easily enough profits in those trillions of dollars, in those stock buybacks, in the extra revenues derived by corporations from the 2017 tax cuts that could pay to keep those 1.3 million jobs by, just ensuring for a period of time, certain stockholders don't get as big a dividend or don't get as big a capital gain. It's not a binary choice that far too many people make it into being.
Yeah, but Dave, we all know trickle down does not work.
I'm not talking about trickle down.
But that's what it is. As a matter of fact, if you take away the capital gains, then you're supposed to think that, things are going to trickle down and give the minimum, increase the minimum wage.
Well, I agree with you. This trickle down is a farce.
It's a farce.
If they're using that as a justification for these tax cuts.
They need to focus on the real reason why people don't have why their dollar isn't spending. why they can't buy, why things are so expensive. And it all goes back to our monetary policy. You know, and that's what it's all about. And it's these multinational corporations, and it's
but that, I understand that.
I don't know what the answer is.
Well, the problem is that can't be the excuse for not paying our fellow citizens a livable wage, a wage, you know, that doesn't require them to work 2, 3, and sometimes 4 jobs.
Hey, they just got billions of dollars from the tax reform, and how many people are getting better wages?
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying.
You can't make laws. I mean, I don't know what the right answer is. I don't think passing a minimum wage, a federal minimum wage, is the right, you know. I never agreed with it, and I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. But the thing of it is, too, minimum wage, if you keep increasing, and I get it, I understand, you keep increasing the minimum wage, it takes away the incentive to do better. It's easier just to give me a larger increase in my wages instead of improving myself, going to school, you know, taking classes. I don't want to stay in this minimum wage job anymore. It was just supposed to be an entry-level worker. You weren't supposed to live off the minimum wage. But when you have the technology that you're having these jobs that are being replaced, the manufacturing that has been left, that lost this country, they used to pay a great wage. Well, we don't have that anymore. There is no, you know, there isn't anything for people to better themselves anymore. You know, minimum wage, again, is just an entry-level position. And, you know, for students, for, you know, your first job.
Tell that to 30 and 35-year-old mothers, single mothers, you know, who work at Walmart. Well, Walmart's different because they've raised their minimum wage to $13 and are supposedly heading toward $15 next year. But, I mean, it's no longer. I mean, we're decades beyond how it was initially conceived.
But that's the whole point. They take the incentive. Government takes the incentive out of everything to better yourself. You know, but that's what they do. And we become a nation that have become dependent on the government for so many things instead of looking to what is really wrong with. They've never addressed any of our problems.
No, come on. That's a tad exaggerated. It's and it's not all about government. I think there's got to be accountability on every single business owner. Now, certainly a small business owner, you know, no one can question how accountable they are. And they're the ones who obviously are affected by increases in the minimum wage far more than, you know, medium-sized and larger corporations are. But where's the morality, you know, of a corporation, you know, who's paying workers $7.25?
Is no morality in this country anymore. That's the whole point of everything also.
Well, my point is that private sector.
How do we bring back manufacturing? It was government issues that made manufacturing leave. So how do we bring them back? It's not working with Donald Trump. They're not coming back. It's never coming back. Not when you have Vietnam. Not when you have... So how does America become competitive again? It can't happen with higher wages. So what is the answer? You know, if you tell these corporations that, you know, by law you have to start paying these, you know, $20-$25 an hour, they're just going to take more of their jobs over to Vietnam.
Look, it's all been, it's all been about, you know, profit from the beginning and not profit sharing or enough of profit sharing. First, the textile mills were in the Rust Belt, the Northeast, and then they unionized and got better pay and better benefits. And all of a sudden, the owners said, well, I think I can do a little bit better in the South. So they reload. They shut down their factories in the Northeast, move to the South, you know, where they could pay folks down there, you know, less money, give less benefits, and where in most cases unions were taboo. And then all of a sudden, you know, wages started going up there, and foreign countries started to get a little more skilled, relatively speaking. And, you know, with the combination of certain trade agreements and tax disincentives, like you said, all these manufacturing jobs went overseas. So, you know, I think the answer lies in part in tax law, but it also lies in part on, I don't know if you call it patriotism, but just profit sharing. I just think there's been far too much greed by companies. You know, I'm not picking on manufacturing, that's at the end of the day. I don't know how you find an acceptable trade-off between a worker who's paid $25, $30 an hour, or 100 worker, 1,000 workers paid at an average rate of that, and then, you know, you've got however many minimum wage workers, and then you increase that, and all of a sudden, you know, you're losing the $30 an hour employee.
In these multinational corporations, there is no patriotism. I can remember surveys back in the 90s, and I reported on this before, surveys in the 90s. How many of you pledged the allegiance in your corporate meetings and so forth, and all the statements from, I think it was only Target. Target was the only one who said, yeah, we do. Everybody else, all your big national, multinational corporations came back, and I can't remember the name. I just remember Target was one that did it. All the other ones said, oh, we don't want to offend our foreign partners. So they threw patriotism out the window for profit and greed. And they got in bed with government, and they get all these subsidies. And so we're kind of like in this wheel that it's
wheel of misfortune.
It is. And how does it get changed? And things become more expensive. Look at our debt. We exported, I've said this before, Bob Chapman used to say this before, we exported our inflation to China. So everybody could bring in all these little trinkets, cheap trinkets, and we felt wealthy. We felt wealthy, and that's exactly what they did. And
he was a guy before his time, the more I learn about him.
And so when we're heading into a break, I can't believe that went by already. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. Just one more time. Tell me again. Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight? Each and every
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Gentlemen, you're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And, Dave, your latest blog today came right out. It's going to be out right after today's program, and it's about silver, about its recent breakout. And, of course, the listeners can subscribe to your blog and newsletter at dgscoins.com and also read them on the Facebook page at DGS Coins. And so tell us a little bit more about that breakout, Dave.
Well, thanks, Melody. It's been a good last few weeks for sure for gold and silver. We've featured gold and its recent trends as recently as Monday's program. So we thought we'd end the week with a closer look at silver. You know, while gold's risen over 6% in the past month, silver's up almost 8%. And despite its profit-taking slip and some of the other causes that Melody talked about this morning, silver's still on track for its best week since July 2016, gaining over 6%. And it's returned to the range we last saw in February and March of this year. Now, while silver's price has broken above the technical symmetrical triangle, as it's called, some precious metal analysts say it still has a few key levels to surpass to continue its surge.
What are tell the listeners about the symmetrical triangle. I'm not a fan of charts and so forth, but I found this one to be interesting.
Well, it's actually not complicated. It's tedious. But, you know, it's the symmetrical triangle is a chart pattern that's characterized by two converging trend lines that connect a series of peaks and troughs that occur in sequence. Now, symmetrical triangles occur when the price of, say, silver is consolidating in a way that generates two converging trend lines with similar or even identical slopes, upwardly trending, downwardly trending. The breakout or breakdown targets for symmetrical triangles equal to the distance between the initial high and low that's applied to the breakout or breakdown point. Now, it's hard to envision this without a chart in front of you, so reading the blog that shows one of these charts, I think, is may help in envisioning how this works. Now, many traders use symmetrical triangles in conjunction with other forms of technical analysis that essentially act as confirmation of an upward or downward trend. In short, they represent a period of consolidation before the price is forced to break out or break down. And a breakout from the upper trend line indicates the start of a new bullish trend. Now, the price target for a breakout or breakdown from a symmetrical triangle is equal to the distance from the high and low of the earliest part of the pattern applied to the breakout price point. For example, symmetrical triangle pattern for silver might start at a low of $12 and move up to $17. Before the price range narrows over time. You know, breakout from $14 would imply a target of $19. And that's simply, you know, 17 minus 12 equals 5 plus, you know, 14 is the price target of $19.
This analyst, Steve Anglo, contends that if silver can close above its upper symmetrical triangle by the end of July, it would next have to push above its 50-month moving average of 1622 just to continue that upward trend.
Yeah. Silver hadn't closed above its 50-month moving average since early 2013, until, that is, around 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time yesterday. Since then, it's remained largely above that level, peaking at $16.57 earlier today. And the price has gradually declined in the few hours since that peak, settling in around, what is it, 16.13 roughly, still above 16. So according to the symmetrical triangle rule, when it closes above this level, we can be confident that its bullish trend will remain in the short run.
And what then?
Well, once silver is able to close above the 1622 level, its 50-month moving average, it's going to need to break the 200-month moving average of 1676 for a sustained bull run. Now, and based on its current run to the 50-month MA, that level, I think, is within reach in the not-too-distant future. You know, in short, silver needs to close at the end of July or August above these levels, and then it can go on and reach the next major key breakout level, which is around $21.50. But we'll save that for another time, hopefully later on this summer or fall. You know, Melody, we could finally be seeing the next leg of the gold-silver bull market after a five-year consolidation phase. However, as you've noted often before, gold and silver could experience some temporary pullbacks during this phase. Investors are just going to have to be patient and vigilant. You know, we just have to wait and see what happens over the next few weeks and months of trading as both gold and silver close above these key levels.
Well, thanks, Dave. And listeners, you can go to our website, dgscoins.com, sign up for a newsletter, and you'll automatically get the blog. And you can find this later today. So thank you. And thank you, Dave.
Yeah, you're welcome.
This is kind of interesting. Mnuchin is pointing to a European candidate to head the IMF, and which surprises me because I would think eventually it's going to be Trump, so I'm not sure what Mnuchin is doing talking about who he's going to choose. But he says there's some good European candidates out there to head the International Monetary Fund. He's not taking for granted the tradition of European leadership at the institution. In an interview on the sidelines of the G7 meeting of finance ministers and central bank governors in Paris yesterday, Mnuchin, there was a consensus among participants that the leadership of the IMF has to be expedited. French Finance Minister Bruno Le Maire said that France will coordinate efforts to identify a European candidate and to head the fund by the end of July. They don't have much time, do they?
Yeah, it's coming fast.
Yeah. Mnuchin declined to comment on individual candidates that he favors for the job, and he hopes there are some good European candidates for us to consider. And by the way, he thinks there are some very good European candidates. So there you go, Stevie.
Yep. How about it? Well, you know, what you said about Trump having his way is an interesting comment. I mean, on the one hand, Mnuchin holds strong sway over the choice of a new IMF leader because he is Secretary of the U.S. Treasury, oversees, you know, 16.5% voting share in the fund's board, which creates an effective veto over most major decisions like this. Now, you know, Christine Lagarde resigned from the IMF earlier this week, citing more clarity about her nomination to become president of the European Central Bank. You know, since their creation, here's the key here in terms of tradition. Since their creation at the end of World War II, the IMF has been led by a European, and the World Bank by an American. Now, you know, Mnuchin's top international official at Treasury, David Malpass, was approved in April as the new president of the World Bank after his nomination by President Trump, with, by the way, unanimous support from European and emerging market countries. Now, he said, Mnuchin added that he's not making assumptions about the U.S.-European leadership duopoly for the institutions, probably laying to the reality that in the end, his boss, the disruptor in chief, could very well take this in another direction before a vote takes place.
Well, you know, no matter what the historical norms, we don't take it for granted that there was a U.S. person for the World Bank. We don't take it an absolute, given that there had to be a European for the IMF, Mnuchin said. And having said that, we appreciated the support for David Malpass, and obviously we're going to work with all our counterparts on getting the best person for the job. This all comes from Mnuchin. So let's go on and read about the backlash against Xi Jinping. A senior fellow at the Lowy Institute think tank in Sydney, Australia, has a new book called Xi Jinping, The Backlash. And Dave and I are going to share a collection of passages from the book over the next few minutes. A more detailed excerpt of the book can be found and also at the website at dgscoins.com. The Facebook page?
Yeah.
All right. Let's just do a couple of these. And so what are these exactly again, Dave?
Well, it's just part of an excerpt from McGregor's book and, you know, about the backlash that Xi is seeing after, you know, his rise to power in China. So that's all this is. A more detailed excerpt is what's on our Facebook page and at cynicism.com. The book, I'm actually not sure. I guess the book must be out if they're, you know, if this large of an excerpt, you know, is out for viewing.
Hmm. Well, go ahead and read.
Well, you know, and well, let's start here. You know, difficult as it may be to see in China because of limitations, you know, they place on the internet and other reasons. You know, the backlash against Xi Jinping is reaching full bloom overseas. You know, big countries like the U.S. are being confronted by a once-in-a-lifetime challenge from China. Small countries feel patronized and bullied. Neighbors worry about being marginalized. Even advanced industrial nations see China coming at them like an unstoppable oncoming train. Probably not the train to nowhere that it's reportedly built in Kenya that needs $5 billion to complete, but that's another story. But all, you know, all these phenomena burst into clear view during the ambitious Xi administration. You know, and now in the face of criticism, especially over, you know, domestic economic policy, but also over foreign policy, Xi's displayed a pragmatic streak since the middle of last year. You know, he's talked up the private sector, agreed to tax cuts to spur growth, and he's also scaled back his ambitious Belt and Road Initiative. Other factors out of Xi's control also weigh against him. You know, there's China's slowing economy, the rapidly declining demographics, and the maintenance of tight authoritarian controls by the party. You know, those things, McGregor says, are much more likely to work against Xi in the future. The same applies to China's tightening fiscal situation with, you know, growth now on a downward slope. You know, and Beijing's ability to throw money at every problem, like bailing out, you know, cash-strapped local governments, is only going to get harder and harder the more it grows in debt.
Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
It sure does.
And by the time the next party Congress due in late 2022, the issue of succession should return with a vengeance. In the short term, the showdown with the U.S. has pushed the widespread anger of Xi's authoritarian ways back underground. When those tensions resurface, as they inevitably will, China's domestic battles will flow out into the world in unpredictable and volatile ways. So China's domestic insecurity, after all, feeds rather than restrains its desires to assert itself overseas. So that doesn't mean replacing cooperation with confrontation at every turn. It just simply means competing with China, speaking openly about its actions, and standing up to it when necessary.
And there you have it.
All right. How much time do we have? We have a little bit of a minute. And any ending thoughts? We wanted to talk about pensions, but
Yeah, pensions. Yeah, we can talk about on Monday some Medicare options if you work past 65. That's not extremely timely, so we can talk about that anytime. We see in another report that over a third of American workers are thinking about or thought about quitting their jobs last quarter. With the 3.5 million who quit their jobs every month.
Was there any reason why they were thinking of quitting their jobs? Was there anything in particular?
Well, the number one issue was pay. Go figure. Those who said they're somewhat or very well paid, less of them considered quitting, 57%, compared with 82% here's the point. It looks like adequate pay is real important to maintaining a quality employee.
That I agree with. That we learned a long time ago. And I learned just recently we're out of time. Just a second ago. Anyway, thank you, Kate. Great show today. And I want to thank the listeners for joining us today. It's Friday. We'll be back on Monday. So until then, be safe. Good night.
Bye-bye.